Hello, everyone. Welcome to Locked On Suns, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, I'm joined by co-host Brendan Kleen. We both write for Bright Side of the Sun, SB Nation. You can follow me on Twitter at EastSidery, and you can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanKleen14. Brendan, you saw a Suns win last night. They won 97-95 to improve to 12-22 on the season. They've won three of the last four without Devin Booker, so both of us never even expected that to happen. So a really actually good win last night for the Suns. What was your thoughts on it?
Yeah, it was extremely impressive. I think there were a lot of interesting things from, you know, players, specific players, but overall it was just that continuation of the bench really being the difference for the Suns. And, you know, more questions just kind of about how they continue to figure that out. But, I mean, the biggest thing overall for me was Dragan Bender.
Oh, for sure. He played 32 minutes, had 4 points, didn't have exactly his best shooting night, so to say. He had 1-6 from three, but by far the most aggressive we've seen Dragan over the past few months, I mean, right? As far as putting the ball on the ground. I think multiple times I think two or three times, I think on back-to-back possessions too, he put the ball on the ground and went to the hoop, which is a really surprising thing to see.
Yeah, he got fouled, shot free throws for what feels like the first time in that type of a situation, driving to the rim like that. So, yeah, it was really good to see.
Yeah, Dragan was a plus 17. He led the team last night. He was a very good defensively down the stretch. We saw the blender almost really close the game out with Alex Len, Dragan, Bender. Bender played 32 minutes. Len only played 21. Had 8 points and 6 rebounds. We talked about it a lot recently on the podcast, Brendan, but we continue to be impressed by this duo of Dragan Bender and Alex Len, and Marquese Chris continues to struggle, and Greg Monroe had a very good game last night, but usually they might be trying to build up his value on the way out. But like we said on the last podcast, when's it going to be time to switch those guys out into the starting lineup?
Yeah, I thought last night you kind of saw offensively what their impact can be because, you know, like you said, Bender, you know, I was impressed with him last night purely from a defensive angle because I think it's the right thing for him to continue to shoot when they're not going in. That's big for him specifically, maybe not for every player, but just because of the problems he's had pulling the trigger, I think he should be doing that. So that was nice, but really the place you saw his value and the reason he got 32 minutes, you know, in my mind is the defense. And so, you know, with Len continuing to be the best rim protecting option that the Suns have and Bender continuing to fill out his game, yeah, that end of the game really came down to Monroe was on the court for the last couple possessions, and Jay Triano said after the game that was purely because they thought he had a better chance if the Grizzlies went to Gasol on the last couple possessions to get the last shot off, that they just felt like Monroe would be able to bang around in the post in that type of a possession a little better than Len. Which I have no problem with, but we saw Bender switch on to Tyreke Evans in the pick and kind of changed up their coverage in the last couple minutes. They were having Josh Jackson go over the screen and kind of play that really aggressively against Evans early in the game, but Evans was just beating him with the first step to the rim every chance really that he had. Either, you know, Jackson was playing him physically, but Evans is just a really solid driving offensive player at this point, so there wasn't a lot he could do. So they changed up their coverage at the very end of the game and had Bender switch onto him, and he stopped him twice. And then not only did he kind of not really block, but heavily contested Evan's shot on the right side of the hoop, an easy layup, and then slapped the ball out from Jermichael Green's hands to seal the win. So it was really impressive and makes you even more optimistic about that duo's potential, but really just Bender kind of on his own more than anything.
Yeah, as Dragan Bender starts to flourish a little bit, at least in last night's game, Marquese Chris continues to regress. He played 16 minutes, had 3 fouls, was the worst plus-minus on the roster at minus 15, only had 2 points and 3 rebounds in 16 total minutes. So at this point, it feels like we were talking about the same stuff with Marquese. It's the fouls, the lack of IQ on the court. We're starting to notice a little bit more as the games go by. I know Zach Lowe wrote a really good piece or a little quick paragraph on Chris and his 10 things he's been watching around the league, but he pretty much said that not to worry yet, but it's getting pretty close to that point, Marquese Chris. Do you feel that way too?
think so. I think if any Suns fans are on Twitter, they probably follow a few of us that got into a little argument about Chris yesterday. And I mean, the biggest thing for me is that he's not even above average at anything right now.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, and so, and there was a part of what we were all talking about on Twitter was, you know, maybe that's a matter of his role, right? It could be that he's just been ineffective the way he's been used because, you know, we talked about, you said last night or yesterday in the episode that, you know, right now his role really in this lineup without Booker is as the shooter, which is not really what you would have assumed would be his role coming out of college. And that was what he was and last night. Nothing really changed as far as the game plan last night, and maybe that's not his ideal role, but he's also not shown himself to be good at any other things, you know, like really consistently above average anywhere. So yeah, I mean, that tide's starting to turn for him, because the minutes that were even for him and Bender earlier in the year and even tilted Chris's way pretty often for a while there, you know, 32 minutes is the highest Bender's had all year, except for the overtime Bucks game. And then I looked last year, he only went above 32 once, and it was in April, so the very, very end of the year when they had just those young guys on the court. So we're seeing that progress from Bender in a much bigger way than Chris.
Yeah, real quick on Dragan Bender before we go and the other guys on the roster. We brought this up a little bit probably last month on the podcast, but speaking on it again real quick with you, Brennan, as far as Bender's role, I know Kellen's talked about it a lot recently on his podcast with Kevin Zimmerman. If you haven't listened to that, go listen to Empire Suns podcast. But if Dragan Bender, we sort of know that Bender on a bad team, he won't be able to show a lot of what he can. But if you give him time to adjust and actually minutes to play, he's actually proven to be a very good, capable two-way guy once his shot falls. Because honestly, at this point, I'd start playing him at least 25 minutes a game.
Yeah, I completely agree there, because he's just expanding. I mean, especially over these last maybe the last week, 2 weeks, when he's been getting those consistent minutes and really kind of in a refined role where he is pretty much just playing within his strengths at this point. He's been pretty I don't know what the word I'm looking for is. I guess I've been really impressed with the way that he continues to do new things within the confidence he's gained, making shots and playing defense. I think that that's what the hope was, is that if he can do those things well, be like a 3-and-D big, really versatile player on both ends, that the other stuff will kind of start to come. And like you said, the two drives to the hoop that we saw yesterday, getting fouled in the air, really eye-opening as to what kind of player he can be. And then, you know, eventually when the ball's in his hands more, when he's getting more minutes, he's going to eventually probably build into that playmaking role that we've all sort of been waiting for. And we haven't seen that yet. I think that's probably the next place that his game goes once he's, you know, getting that consistent time. But I think you're right. He needs it for sure. And we're only going to see his potential if he's on the court. I mean, that's obvious, but it hasn't always been the case for him.
Yeah, when looking back on, I know last year was a different coaching staff. Earl Watson was the guy leading the charge, but at this point, to see how Bender was pretty much locked to the bench all of last season, even without his injury, compared to Marquese Chriss, it's kind of ridiculous to think about at this point, because I think we're starting to realize how much talent Bender has compared to Chriss at this point and in their stage of their development. So it's going to be really interesting to see how the minutes fare moving forward, because I think at this point, Bender has earned his minutes over Chriss, but over these next couple weeks, it's going to be really interesting to see how that falls out. But one quick guy I wanted to touch on as well was Greg Monroe. He had one of his best games as a Sun last night, almost a triple-double, which was surprising to me. 8 points, seven assists for a big, 12 rebounds in 27 minutes. So like we said on the last podcast, we feel like Greg Monroe might be the odd man out when Isaiah Cannon gets that possible one-year contract and when Devin Booker returns from his injury. But is this the perfect type of game you want to see for Monroe to possibly build up his value, or do you want him to stay around?
No, I don't think it's best for him to stick around. I think continuing on the Bender and Chris track, you eventually, you know, this is both of their second season, maybe the two of them, one of the two of them, because of his, but those guys can probably play center at some point too, and maybe should be playing center to create more space on offense and develop themselves a little bit, so that creates even more minutes to be had at the center position. So no, I don't think Monroe needs to stay around. And yeah, I do think it's a pretty solid game offensively for him. I do think he was a big part of the problems containing Tyreek Evans getting to the rim pretty much at will in that first half. There was a lot of shots that Monroe had the opportunity to contest, and either wasn't in the best position to do so, or just didn't have the energy, or you know, it's hard to tell with things like that. But he wasn't contesting as many shots as you'd hope.
Yeah, when
So offensively for sure, but defensively, it's more of the same for him.
yeah, night and day, like it feels like when Alex Len comes in alongside Bender and when Monroe and Chris subbed out, it's almost like the exact 180 as far as defensive efficiency goes. Because, like you said early on in that game, I think the first six or seven drives at the rim they made, and then once those guys came back in, it sort of solidified back down a little bit. But real quick on Alex Len again before I jump off to three other guys I want to touch on, but Alex Len only played 21 minutes last night, had 0 fouls, 8.6 rebounds, 2 assists. Do you want to see more playing time out of Len? Even though obviously they want to probably showcase Monroe over the next week or so before they have to make that decision. But do you want to see Len getting around 25, 30 minutes a game? Because at this point, I feel like he should be.
I think the big question now with Len, and just to the rim stuff at the rim scoring for the Grizzlies last night, they started 9 of 11
Oh, wow.
at the rim, according to Cleaning the Glass. And then they, for out of their next 32 shots, they shot 43 times at the rim, which is way too many just in general. They shouldn't be getting there often enough to shoot that many, but they only made 15 of their next 32. So the Suns really did lock down once Len and Ben Bender got their chance to play defense and impact the game that way. So that was nice to see that they turned the tide back their way a little bit. But as far as Len goes, I think the big question with him at this point, after seeing the development he's had as the backup, playing, you know, this typical 20 to 25 range, I think the next step for him, if he can't get there, or, you know, maybe it's a matter of just doing even better in his role, but you know, he has never been that starter before, right? So we don't know if that's really something that would benefit him, or how he would handle it, or what kinds of ripple effects it would have with the offense. So to the coaching staff, what way they see him long term and for him moving forward. Triano talked about it a little pregame, and it was kind of interesting to hear him really say that the biggest change for Len has been simplifying everything. And that doesn't necessarily sound like a guy that is going to have more responsibility and more opportunity minutes wise or role wise. So maybe they're just happy with having a guy who can come in, and 25 minutes for is pretty solid, you know. So if they're fine with what his role is and him just dominating when he's in the game, maybe they don't make that change or really try to ask him to do too much more, because he's become really elite at as far as backup bigs go.
Yeah, I was thinking about that because I think the last time we saw Len actually start was when Chandler was out. I think that was against Miami in November, and he got absolutely destroyed by Hassan Whiteside on both ends. So maybe you are right. Maybe he is best at taking on second units and really stabilizing the defensive efficiency for those guys alongside Dragan Bender. But real quickly, let's go into three guys. I didn't even notice till you texted me this, but Troy Daniels, Isaiah Cannon, and Danuel House, they're all three from the Houston Rockets affiliate, Rio Grande Valley. They all started playing there. So that's a really interesting fact you brought up to me. But with those three guys, they continue to impress me. I mean, Troy Daniels had a game-winning three over his former team last night as well. And really, these three guys are starting to stabilize themselves in the second unit.
Yeah, you can't. We should have mentioned Daniels making that shot at the top of the show. That was, you know, he was not shy about saying how good that felt for him after getting traded really late into the off season from the Grizzlies, and you know, really having a revelation of a season this year offensively for the Suns, to be able to hit that shot and show the team kind of what they're missing out on, you know, especially with the Grizzlies struggling so much. And he said, he had a, you know, cool quote, just said, you practice every day for opportunities like those, basically. You know, it just felt really good for him. So, but as far as the Rio Grande Valley Vipers, I thought that was really interesting. I talked to House and asked him just what he's and unit that's had so much success, especially on the road trip, the three-game road trip last week and again last night against Memphis. And he really, he went right to that. He said the system they run there has been helpful for him. He learned a lot playing there with those coaches, and really he said that the biggest things that offensively that they stress in that system is just moving the ball, finding open shots, kind of like, you know, Mike D'Antoni, obviously now the coach of the Rockets, but he's famous for always saying the ball finds energy, right? So if you're moving and cutting and doing the right things, then open shots are going to come. And so I think that makes a lot of sense from what we've seen from this unit. And, you know, last night the bench didn't shoot extremely well, but they obviously just bring something maybe even intangible when they're in the game. And so, yeah, it was interesting to hear his perspective on that, but I think they continued that last night for sure.
Yeah, just real quick on the second unit. I mean, we've obviously seen, obviously really the Suns in general, I wanted to ask you, Brendan, they've won three of their last four games. They've pretty much, not saying turn the corner, so to say, but I mean, obviously I feel like they're sort of finding their groove, because without Devin Booker, I thought they only get one win in this possible 10-game stretch, and they've already won three of the last four. So just what's your quick thoughts on that, and overall just the Memphis game last night too, because this team's really improving.
Yeah, the defense has been the biggest thing, and that was the constant last night. I think they had a frustrating first half. I think anybody would have said that, but they really locked down in the fourth quarter. Memphis was doing a good job attacking the glass. They got so many opportunities to put up shots, even, you know, really quick types of putbacks that they could not finish. And so I don't know how much credit, maybe the Suns don't get all the credit for the Grizzlies missing easy shots, but at the same time, they did make necessary changes to slow Tyreke Evans down last night, and Marcus Gasol had an inefficient game, even though he was also, I thought, for the most part, finding easy looks. They were passing really, really well for most of the game and just were unable to finish, and that, I think, again, maybe Bender and Len have something to do with that, contesting a lot more than the first unit does. But yeah, and then, you know, we saw TJ Warren have a probably the best night of the match here. So yeah, I mean, all around it's been a good thing. It's just going to change so much because, you know, Booker's about the biggest piece. I mean, he obviously is the biggest piece you could lose. So not only does the game plan change, but roles will change and everything. So it'll be a really interesting change for them once that happens. But I think it's probably given some confidence to players that didn't have it before, for sure.
I know some fans have brought this up, but I wanted to quickly ask you this as well, Brendan. But guys like Isaiah Cannon, Troy Daniels, Greg Monroe, they're helping the team win right now. They're 12-22. They've won three of the last four, like we've said. But a lot of people want to see the young guys play a lot more. And also they want to see, instead of Troy Daniels making that game-winning shot, they feel a lot better Bender made that game-winning shot, so to say, just for development reasons. But do you it doesn't care to me, obviously, because this team needs wins and to experience winning a lot more. But what's your overall thoughts on guys like Cannon, Daniels, and Monroe helping this team win when they really need to get a top pick as far as tank standings go?
Yeah, I think it's just the way the season was bound to go, because especially after the Bledsoe trade got them back another veteran they wanted to move. I mean, their real thing was that pick, but just knowing McDonough, how he operates, I think it became clear pretty quickly that he was going to end up milking the Monroe situation quite a bit, and we've seen that obviously play out. And then, I don't know, I mean, you have to have players, right? They don't have a roster full of competitive young players. So maybe in an ideal world, those guys are the ones playing a bigger role in winning basketball. But that's just not really realistic at this point. I mean, they wouldn't even be able to form a legitimate team without some of those players in the game. It would be, if we have had concerns about how ugly the games have been over the past week and a half, 2 weeks, I can't even fathom what it would be like without some of those guys' contributions. And I mean, sure, maybe that's possible that there could be some changes for the better. Obviously, maybe Len Bender, we talked about getting more minutes. Jackson only played 26. Maybe you're of the opinion he should just be getting as many as he possibly can, having been the fourth overall pick this year. But the three guys who didn't play last night are the three oldest players on the team.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So at the end of the day, I mean, argue about minutes, sure, but as far as playing, not playing, and role goes, the guys that played the most minutes last night were the players who probably should. Bender, Warren, Jackson, Ulis, those are the three or the four leading minutes guys on the team outside of Greg Monroe. Like, I don't know, it's picking nits. The guys who are playing well are playing the most. I think that's how it should be.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there because, like you said, I mean, if Monroe or Daniels or Cannon, if those guys were on the roster, I don't know how this team even has like 5 or 6 wins at this point. So I think it's I think this team, how young they are, they need to start winning. Like, I think TJ Warren said it last month to the media at practice one day. He was like, he's just tired. Triano was asked about like TJ getting all his technicals in a span of a week or so, and he says he's tired of losing. So that's a good point. They just need to like start getting on that winning track, and it really doesn't matter at this point because McDonough, like we've said, he has the assets to move back up in the draft if he wants to. But really, the 30 wins is on track right now because they have 12 already. Booker returns in a week or so. Davon Reed's back. They could make a trade at the deadline. So it's kind of surprising to me how they've done without Booker. But how do you see them doing over these next couple of games without him? Because there's a possibility he could come back against the Memphis Grizzlies on December 26th. But it seems more likely at this point he's back around December 29th against the Kings or December 31st against the Sixers. But what's your overall thoughts on how the team is going to look with Booker back and how they'll fare?
Yeah, the Wolves, they've played well against, right? They've beat them twice now. And then the Grizzlies, they just beat last night, and that's their game on the 26th, the day after Christmas. And then the Kings, they've also beaten. So they're not playing a particularly difficult stretch over the next 4 or 3. And then New Year's Eve at home against the Sixers, that's a really, really talented team that has the tools to just overpower the Suns. So I'm not necessarily super optimistic about that one, but maybe you bring Booker back that night, kind of try to liven up the crowd, home crowd, get people in the building for what should be a fun game at the very least with so much talent on the court if Booker is back. So I think that they'll probably I'm always of the opinion that guys should come back from injury, like a long-term injury like that, at home. I just think it's better for them, better for their rhythm, and better for, you know, the home fans to get to see that. But, you know, if he's ready to play against the Kings, he's missed enough time now that they maybe just want to put him back as soon as he can. I think they'll continue to be competitive over the next 3 games until that Sixers game for sure.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun one on New Year's Eve because it's hashtag the timeline versus hashtag the process. And they've had some wars of words over Twitter the past few months, so it'll be interesting to see how that finally is on court. But real quick before we let you go, Brennan, you saw Devin Booker warm up yesterday. He was warming up a little bit. He seemed a little gimpy, but not that much. Just what was your overall thoughts and takeaways from Booker up close, seeing him warming up? Is he close?
Yeah, he's kind of just putting up shots. I mean, he had his typical three-point routine before the game, just going around the arc, and then he was mixing in some, you know, post work and whatever with Jay Ellis. So, I don't know. I mean, that's just typical, right? He shouldn't be too affected by it. At this point, he had not sleeve because it was on his leg, but some sort of like protective padding there that you see guys wear on like their shoulder when they injure their upper body. And so it seemed like routine, and all reports have been that he's ready to go and it's on track. So I don't expect it to affect him too much. I mean, it's just a groin injury that doesn't typically linger in any massive way if it's not the hamstring or anything. So I think he'll probably be back to form when he gets back, as far as, you know, whatever we've heard.
Yeah, I imagine so as well, because looking at the stats, I know the NBA All-Star voting came out for NBA.com yesterday, and looking at the stats real quick on Booker, he has 24-4-4 so far this season. The only guards out west doing that right now are Stephen Curry, James Harden, Damian Lillard. So it's going to be interesting to see if he can still get in with missing about 10 or so games, but it's going to be pretty fun to see how he does until then. But real quick, I wanted to finally end on a discussion here. Just one last question for you with Mike James. He was a DNP. And like you say, he was one of the oldest guys in the roster now. How do you see him on this team, and do you think he might be the one that's gone instead of Monroe?
It would be, like I said the last episode, I need to look into what the rules are for that, but it would just be as far as the message that they're sending, very questionable, I think, to put it lightly, to kind of have this story come out of nowhere, get national attention even, with his journey to the NBA, finally culminating with that contract on the Suns after, you know, his history with Phoenix and all that. It's already frustrating to see him go straight to the bench after not, you know, he didn't really play. He didn't have any stretch where he was, you know, shooting poorly or really anything to earn that trip to the bench. And I get he's a rookie. Technically, that those things come. He doesn't have the reputation. That means he should just be playing automatically every night. But I would be really surprised and frustrated if he were to be mistreated that way. I mean, I think it would be mistreatment. I don't know if that's fair, but I just think it's not cool at the very least. Yeah, I don't know. Oh, it's just crappy to do that to somebody that worked so hard and didn't really give you any reason to bench him like that.
Yeah, I mean, like we've talked about before, Mike James bet on himself. There's a really good story. Brandon talked to Baxter Holmes of ESPN about it on the air recently about his story, and it's one of the better ones in the NBA right now. But like you said, the real game to the bench at this point, even though he is expected to be that third point guard, it's kind of interesting to see how they did it so fast. But like we've said before, it'll be interesting to see how this all shakes out really over the next couple weeks. And we'll be back with you guys for the next episode following the Timberwolves game at home. But until then, we'll see you guys then. Yeah, that was great, man. Thanks.
Sweet.